the we always try on each year by Azal Avonin to speak about somebody who either went through the list cordon or somebody who didn't go, who didn't make it out, and to be mekoinen on someone who is a one of the Arazi Levonim, the Wira Shaykhs too, and from that to learn on the others. The person that I want to speak about this year is somebody who possibly is the aside of who we are and what we are. It's his 75th yard site from when he was Iskandish, and that was Rabbi Chana Vassin is Chana Vracha. Rabbi Chana Vassin is the aside of the yeshivas, and his dogma in every way possible. Rabbi Chana was born in 1875. He learned in Telz for 7 years, and his rabbi, his main rabbi there, was Rabbi Shimon Shkop. He then learned by Rabbi Chaim Briska for 2 years. I was very close with him. And then different kufas of his life, he would come back to it. As a Talmud in yeshivas, he was tremendous masmid, extremely mesuda, extremely, every minute was precious and organized, very serious, and everything with mesinus, and despite, I mean, it was a Talmud, but he had a tremendous ava for pshat. He became a Ramani yeshiva in 1903. There was a town called Amitzlaslav, where he became a Ravni yeshiva, became head of a yeshiva. The people in town wanted him to make changes, and he refused to make the changes they wanted. It was about the Tzurit yeshiva and so on. And once when he was gone, they told him not to come back, and that kufa was over. He was married already. In 1899, he married Remeya Atlas, his Suvalka Rav's daughter, became Suvalka Rav later, and he was married already. And then he went off to Chavetz Chaim to learn in Raven. Chavetz Chaim had a Kreil Kutchin. He left his family, and he learned by the Chavetz Chaim. It became his, the Chavetz Chaim became his Rebbe in Hanhaga, his Rebbe in everything. So Reb Chaim Briska was for him his light in learning, and that was his Rebbe in learning, and he later would have more Shaykhs with him. And then Chavetz Chaim became to him his Rabbi Muvhak. He learned in Radin. He was married, but he left his family to learn, like many people did in those days, Prussian. And he would learn 18 hours a day. It was a tremendous masmid. And every minute was worked out. The only thing that he would take time off was if somebody spoke to Chavetz Chaim and was willing to share the conversation, he would sit and listen to every word. He held that every single word of the Chavetz Chaim's had a tremendous depth to it, and became his Rebbe and his guiding light. He then went to Brisk in Yeshiva Ketana over there, and he taught. He taught until World War One. World War One. Brisk was, the Jews were chased out. Brisk was too close to the border, and he ended up in a shtetl with the Chavetz Chaim together. The Chavetz Chaim also had to leave, and they were somewhere in Russia for the duration of war. On the way back, they crossed the border into Poland, into Baranowitz, and the Chavetz Chaim told him to stay there. there was a yeshiva there, and it was as head of this yeshiva that Rabbi Chana left his mark on Klal Yisrael. He was about 1920, he became the head of Aronovich, the yeshiva, and until 1940, he was the yeshiva was disbanded. In those 20 years, Rabbi Chanan, in a sense, created all of my yeshivas. The reason was that never the age of Talmidim that he dealt with, the age of Talmidim was sort of teenage years, parallel, similar to what we'd call high school, until, let's say, 20. It was geared for 6 years. So from age 14, 15 till 20, 21, they would learn by him. And then he would send them off to other yeshivas, to Kletsk, to Grodno, to Kamenitz, wherever. That was, and then eventually they would usually find their way to the Mir. That was the Mahal. No one did the Doris before, what you are and what you're supposed to be was kind of obvious. Between the wars and before the war, before World War I, that had become disintegrated. There was no Surah Ben Torah, there was no understanding of what it is in Hanhaga, in Hanhagois, in Hashkafis. It was kids who were very brilliant and loved sort of being mefautel, ended up in yeshivas, and sometimes it was too late. Sometimes they had their own sense of things, and a lot of yeshivas came hard because of it. There wasn't any tzura. It was too late by the time people showed up in yeshivas. They had been in basically no place. They had been learning all sorts of odd places. The yeshiva itself, Baranovitz, was a place that was designed to create a bentayr in every way possible. Rabbi Chanan's insistence on hasmada, he was a paragon of hasmada. Rabbi Chanan was a stickler for pshat, and he insisted on finishing a masechta. He had two shirim that he said, a fifth shir and a sixth shir. The fifth year and a sixth year, he said. Fifth shir still was a little bit more noted to pshat, and the sixth year was a little bit more lomdas, chaburis, and things like that. And different people from different places wanted to come to the sixth shir, and he said, even if Mabra Rashi comes, the gate with the sixth year to the fifth year. There was no fighting with him on it. Rabbi Chanan's tzura, what davening looks like, was he was compared to tfus, the togetherness in davening, the answering out loud, the tzura of the yeshiva davening, that was by him Kodesh Kodashim. Every single element of his benteres hanhagis, his dibur, his interactions, everything about it was stamped in Baranovitz. It had a lot more to do. They had the Rabbi Yankel Luchanska, Shemikim Domov, was instrumental in it, but it had a lot more to do with Rabbi Chanan's person. Rabbi Chanan's person was an incredible personality. He was someone whose mind was kol kuloi in charge of his person. Everything was thought out, and nothing was left to whim, what he feels like. He was my father's chanvach. My father didn't learn in Baranovich. My father remembers him in this, by the war years in Kovno when he was. He walked calmly, focused on learning. He was always thinking learning, calm, collected. Everything about it was kulay, seichel, being shalit on the person. He worked tremendously hard on saying a shir, exactly with the words that he wanted. And most of the time, when Bachman would come over and ask him a question, he would think a minute, and then he would repeat the shir word for word. And sometimes it could happen two or three times. He felt that the person missed something, because there weren't better ways to explain what he said. It was extremely... He had a tremendous memory, tremendous, fabulous memory. He was known, and yet he chazed incessantly. And the dmus of Rabbi Chanan chazering was a constant dmus. More than anything else, he has it over and over again. His messinos in thinking something through, in you know, weighing something, was incredible. He had a seriousness. Life, it's famous, he didn't allow himself to smile because also to malit pivschoik. Someone told me, Rabbi Yochanan Gerlachson of Racha was his roommate in Radin, in the Kol. And Rav Gelich was a speaker, and he spoke at some sort of Sheva Brachas, and he said a Vertel, Chassidish a Vertel, to play on words in Shem Yilachim or whatever. And he said, Rabbi Yochanan didn't talk to him for 2 weeks. He said, it's not a joke. What's playing? What's this playing with Psukim? Rabbi Yochanan, there was nothing. Everything was the way it had to be. He would walk in the street, whether it was raining or snowing or wind or whatever, he walked as calmly as ever. And sometimes Rav Chanan, what he says, it's going. It's raining. Sometimes he said, so it's raining, so it's snowing. I mean, if you have to go, you have to go. There was nothing by him that ever betrayed. If it should be done, then it's done. And if it shouldn't be done, it's not done. There's an incredible story of showing that how each piece, each side in its right time, in the right place, and so on. There was a bachur in yeshiva, a very bright boy, big bal kishrin, who was sort of going off the derech, and shittas and deyas were not. They wanted to bring it to Rav Chanan's attention, but they needed to do it in a way because Rav Chanan, these things were very serious, and so they sent the bachur, who was a big pikeach, Shlomo Lawrence, Chaim Vracha, to speak to Rav Chanan. So he comes to Rav Chanan and he says he has something that's weighing on him. What's the matter? He said he has a chava who's a brilliant guy, tremendous body Talmud Chacham, but he's having trouble in Amunah, Shittas, and Deyas, and so on. Rav Chanan was very, very warm, and he was like, he said, you have to do what you can for him. And Rav Chanan was very touched. The person was a Chacham, he knew how to present it. And then when he had Rav Chanan at a point that he thought, he's told Rav Chanan, he happens to be in yeshiva. Rav Chanan said, so we have to ask him to leave immediately. And he said, but the Rebbe just said, Rachman, he said, but there's a mishkol. He says, what about the Christ the other bachur? On a personal level, do whatever you can for him. But it's mishkol. It's not, Rachmanis is not what dictates it. What's the right thing to do dictates Rachmanis. The right thing as a yochid is to be rachim and to do whatever you can for him. And the right thing as a tzibur is to be manayim from the tzibur. And everything about it, there was a bachur once acted, did something wild, whatever. There was very little tolerance. Things that Rabbi Chanan saw were not min ashura. The yashrus by him was extremely, extremely chashiv. And for 20 years, he built that door of Bnei Torah who were ready to come into yeshiva and be mekabel Torah from the bigger Bay. They had a tzur of Ben Torah. They had a solid basis in learning. And almost every single person that... Every single Rebbe that I remember having had learned by Rav Chanan. He was the high school, so to speak, and the training ground. Then each one went on, Kefi Erica, wherever he went to. His calm, he was, there are stories, he was sitting and learning in Colorado, and got a telegram that his wife gave birth back in wherever they were living. So he made a bracha, and then he finished learning, didn't say a word more, and then in the evening he asked the Chavetz Chaim should go back or not. Chavetz Chaim held not, and he stayed. He got a telegram once while he was learning that his father had passed away. He walked in the other room, he gave it to his wife, told her a few words what she should do, and returned to the sugya. At night, his chavrusis saw him sitting and sobbing, but his self-control to do what he wanted, when he wanted, if he was right, was incredible. He had a chavrusa that came, a chasha person came 3 minutes late. Rav Chanan was saying, but at the end, Rav Chanan asked him, what time is it? The person pulled out a clock. He pulled out his watch, and they had the watch and looked at it and sold him. So Rav Chanan said, so you do have a watch, and it's right. So why'd you come late? So he said, you know, he was in the bathroom and whatever. So the Kohen said, you know, I walk by, every time I go to yeshiva, I walk by soldiers standing, and there was some sort of something or other guarding. And he said, they're also human beings, but somehow a person can learn to control himself. And if they can do it, we can do it. His ability to have that absolute self-control was a function of his das. He was kol kolei das. Rav Aaron Kreizer, our Rav Kreizer's father, Balachayim Chaim, told me once, he learned by Rav Chanan, spoke about Rav Chanan with tremendous, unlimitless haratza. They all did. There wasn't a person. Rav Chanan was a demus, me'ala me'eva. He said, Rav Chanan had to go away collecting for a few months. He said, he came to yeshiva in the morning like it was a regular day. And he said the shir like it was a regular day. And he said the shir from 9 to 10. And at 10 o'clock, he closed the gemara. And he says, the olam will excuse me. I now have to go for a few months to yeshiva. And he left to go off to England or to America, wherever he went to. He said his ability to be calm and not be moved, upset, shaken, distraught, and distracted by anything was incredible. The yeshiva was always very poor. He raised all the money, and he was sometimes better at it and sometimes less, but he took the full achrayas. He once said, in kind of bitter sarcasm, he said, the yeshiva has three machers. Machers means people make, do. He said, Rabbi Sol Yank, the Mashkiach, macht Yirei Shemayim. He makes Yirei Shemayim. Rabbi David Rappaport, that son of David, was a big goyim, was around there, and makes Svarim. And Rabbi Chanan makes Choyves. He was the one who kept yeshiva going. Europe was incredibly poor at the time, so local support was non-existent. And he made effort. He wouldn't turn away Bachrim for the lack of money. He felt it was nefashis. And it became increasingly harder. The yeshiva went on for 20 years. And this was the cradle for every single Rosh Yeshiva that we had went through there. He in 1938 actually, the matzah of the yeshiva was very, very difficult. And he decided he has to go to America to collect. People told him it's the only place he had done. England, he had been in Belgium. And Beles Breira, after a lot of Agnes Nefesh, he decided it meant leaving for a year plus. Bochum came to him crying. They said, you know, we walked across Europe to come to yeshiva. We promise we'll eat nothing and just stay. And Rav Chanan said, he made the cheshem, and he said, as much as a squeeze the Bachram, he said, he has the ramen that he's giving them, and what they get is minimal. And he said, nobody's willing to lend them anything anymore, they're not willing to give them any more meat on credit, not any more bread on credit, and so on. And he went off to America. He stayed in America for a year and a half, from 1938, somewhere in Cheshvan, I think, possibly, and returned after Pesach in 39, right before Pesach in 39. That year and a half in America, he worked very hard raising money, and he succeeded. He succeeded in raising a substantial amount of money, and he sent back money to build a building and to buy land for Yeshiva Tana, for a younger Bachrim, that'll never build. That never got built. That was the end. In that year and a half in America, he suffered a share of bizyonis and so on, but he created a cadre of balabatim in the Torah, who for the first time in their lives saw a person, what it means to be an Olam Gadol. It was the first person that they had seen who was Meshich Molamayla, a European Gadol. He's the group that he was Makariv and that formed around him, later became the lay leaders of Aguda, of the yeshivas. They, whether it was Kempa Gudowitz of Scherer, whether it was all of these people, Tress, all of these people, he was the person that they reached out when he reached out to them. He was the person they saw in him with the mus of what a Talmud Chacham is, of what a person was kol kuloi doing what's right. And he created in that year and a half in America that cadre of Mekablin. We spoke about the Kisei and the Oyel. The Kisei created in Europe, the Mashpiyim, the Mekablin. Here were people who would be willing, when the time comes, to send their children to a yeshiva. He drew many people to him. He also stood strong on things, and in a certain way expressed what would become a certain understanding, a certain principle and axiom of yeshiva hashkafa. At that time, America was spiraling downhill. There was very little going on, I mean, positive. Everything was sort of spiraling out. There were no really yeshivas to speak of, and everything was down. And one of the things that was popular were making mixed dancing evenings under the banner of L'shem Tzedakah. They'll give the money to Tzedakah for shuls, for yeshivas, whatever it is. And Rebbe Chanan worked very hard in Baltimore. They signed on all the rabbanim against it. There was somebody in Philadelphia an acquaintance of his, who blurted out that he's having that evening and that's where he's going to raise money, and Rebbe Chanan told no way. And the person asked Rebbe Chanan, listen, these people do anything anyway, and this way at least we keep him in the shul and we keep him connected to Yiddishkeit and so on and so forth. And Rebbe Chanan told him the line that became, in a sense, the foundation stone for the way which we deal with things. He said, that's not our business and it's not our concern. We need to do what we need to do. How many Jews stay or don't stay, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's business. Our business is to keep the halacha, what's right. And if it's wrong, no matter what the cheshbonos are, like we learned, like we spoke about being Mehavas Mishpat, Rav Chana said, if it's us or it's us, yes, there's makom in halacha, there is a makom in halacha v'shas hadchak. So Rebbe Chanan was not against that. Rebbe Chanan were in different places where Rebbe Chanan compromised on certain things that he felt it's possible and in the right setting it's appropriate. But when things that are awesome, no cheshbon. He said it's not your business. You're not a salesman. You're not out to sell a Kadosh Baruch Hu stock at a discount. Your job is to do what you're supposed to do, and it echoes the words of Yeshaya Novi, by the Mifkidis Mifkidis, Bahari Kafshakon Alomali, when it says by Yeshaya Novi, by Chizkiyo, that he was nixon him to die, and Yeshaya came and he asked him why he was a nixon to die, and he said, because we weren't Oisik and Piri Rivian. So he said, I knew because I have children who would become Menashe and Machach Ayesro. And Yeshaya told him, by the Mifkidis Mifkidis, Bahari Kafshakon Alomali, your chiyuv is to do what's right, what you were told to do. Cheshbonos belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Cheshbonos only makes sense within the framework of what should we do that we're allowed to do. There's a cheshbon. And that was Rebbe Chanan was, he brought that into America, that there are red lines, and the Shulchan Aruch is the red line. And what you have to do as much as you can, but what you can't do, you can't do, and it's not your business. He sat here for a year and a half, and the clouds were beginning to form in Europe. And people knew that, people suspected that, and they told him, they begged him to stay. And they said, we'll bring your kids. He said, I have 400 children, I have a yeshiva. They said, we'll do what we can, stay, and this and that. And his host, that he was very close to, begged him to stay, and he said, it's mamish asa to go back. And it was the only time you ever heard of Rebbe Chanan be a little bit abrupt with him. He said, I wasn't aware that you're a paisik on Issa v'heta. And his Rebbe Chana's son told over later, Reb Simcha Wasserman, that he felt his father also struggled with it, and he needed in his own mind to resolve it absolutely. Rav Kalbach, who was a Yekesh Rav at the time in New York, asked and pleaded him to stay. And Rav Chana told him, a captain stays with his ship till the last one. It's my job to go back. And he went back, and everyone knew that whatever it is, he's not going back to good matzah. I don't think anyone ever knew what would happen, but he was going back. He was in England for Pesach, and someone asked him there what he thinks is the what's this tkufa? Is the war going to break out? And he has, and he said the following. He said he thinks for sure the war is going to break out. He said it will have horrendous consequences, but at the end, England and the Allies will win because demechabed Tanakh. They have a belief. They believe. And they asked him, what do you think we can expect from Hitler in a war like this? Rav Chanan asked to bring a Tanakh, and he opened up a Daniel, the 8th Perek, and he began reading with feeling. Ube'achis Malchusa, at the end of the Malchus, kechosim apoyshim, when there will come time to punish the Poyshe Yisrael, Yamud Melech Azponim, a Melech of tremendous audacity, of daring, will rise. For Otsam Koichoi, he will have incredible strength, Volobi Koicho, not his doing, but in an unearthly strength. V'nifloi is Yashchis, and wonderful things he will destroy. V'itzliach v'asa, and will succeed. V'hishchis atzumim v'am kedoshim, and will destroy mighty ones and holy ones. V'itzliach mirma b'yodai, and his trickery will succeed. V'belevavoi yagdil, and he will become very arrogant. U'bishalvo yaschis rabim, and in tranquilly will destroy many. Vasar sarim yamrit, he will stand above other sarim. U'be'efes yad yishaver, and without even anyone's hand, no one will kill him. In other words, he will disintegrate of himself. That's what he read, and didn't add more than that. He came back to Baranovich, and a few months later, the Germans invaded Poland. They ran off to Lithuania. The yeshiva ran off. They were in Vilna for a while, and then they were in a small village near Vilna. And then Lithuania got split between the Russians and the Germans. Poland got split between Russian and Germans, and then Lithuania became independent. The Russians then marched into Lithuania and took over Lithuania, and for a year or so was communist. They came into the yeshiva, was a small town someplace, and It was a Jewish communist, the head of the whatever it was, who was waiting. He had sat 7 years in jail for being communist, was waiting for his turn to be able to take his revenge on everything and everybody. He marched into the yeshiva and told Rav Chanan that they need to disband the yeshiva immediately. Rav Chanan told him, I'm not disbanding the yeshiva. And he told him, the world has changed, it's a new world, new order, there's no need for yeshivas anymore, and you're best off advising Brachman that each should leave and get lost. Rav Chanan told him, the world hasn't changed. The world has ups and downs, and nobody is sure where he's going to be tomorrow. And the person told him, that might be true, but right now I'm here, and you're leaving. A few days later, they got word that they're about to be arrested by the NKVD, and he ran away. He ran off to Kovno, he and two other Ramim, hidden. They had arranged for them, someone had arranged a flight out to Sweden, which was neutral at the time. And as Reb Elchanan was leaving to the airport with his children, a big, heavy suitcase fell off onto his son's foot, broke his foot very badly, and they had to stay. And that way, his fate was sealed. His last kuf in Kovno, my father remembered him vaguely, and he stayed in Reb Avram Grudzinski's house. The calm that was on him, he knew, and everybody knew, what's happening. That they're descending into a whirlpool of hell. It went from bad to worse, the communists were destructive, and then the Germans came in. And the, but he never ever lost himself. His whole metzias was the same tranquility, and everything muddled and so on. He stayed in Rav Grudzinski's house, and Rav Grudzinski's son, Meir Esser, Yisrael Grudzinski, big tzaddik, Chashev, still alive, remembers him there, and he remembers him sitting all the time and learning with the Bacha. His father, Rav Grudzinski, asked him to say a shir on Kiddush Hashem, and Reb Elchanan hesitated, and he said, "I don't have the appropriate menuchas hanefesh. I'm not sure that I could say a shir lamitoy. I'm hesitant." And he told him that, and he told him afal pikein, it's important. He said, "Give me time," and he said a shir klali on Kiddush Hashem. And then he was mevar la'alacha, what's the appropriate bracha to make on Kiddush Hashem, and told them. And then Rav Avram said a shmuz. The next day, a few days later, the Germans marched in, the beginning of the Operation Barbarossa, they turned against Russia, and the Germans took over Lithuania. They gave first dibs at killing the Jews to the local Lithuanian Shkatsin. It was part of the Germans. There was like a double win-win. First of all, the Jews would be killed, and it would be some other people would do it. And Lithuanians made a terrible pogrom, terrible. Went from house to house. These were people that were neighbors. These were people that were part of the towns. These were people that lived with wealth. There was no enmity, and it was incredible. The screams, the yelling. And Rabitzel Grudzinski is still alive, and he said somehow they passed over his house. Why? He doesn't know. But Reb Elchanan was sitting there, and it was, and that was it. A day later, they caught a kid carrying a note. They followed the kid back to the house, and a few Lithuanian thugs came in, and they had a fight with Reb Elchanan. They didn't know who it was, but he looked extremely imposing. He had a tremendous size upon him, and they said, "Come." He asked Reb Avram's Grudzinski's daughter to please go up and to go upstairs and to bring him his coat and his watch. She went upstairs. When she came down, he was gone. They marched him with thousands of Jews down the streets of Kovno. A person named Rav Gavrilta, he's still alive also, he was watching it. He said he walked with the same dignity they always had. He said, no motions, everything, same tranquil person, lost in his thoughts. He said for a minute it was hard to tell who's leading who, until you saw the Shkatsin with the guns and the clubs, so you knew who was leading. But his dignity and his carriage, and they took about 10,000 Jews to the fort, 7th fort, there were a ring of forts around Kovno. They kept them there for a day without food and drink, and then on Yud Beis or Gimel Tammuz, they murdered them all. There were people who escaped, young children were able to get out, there were enough small cracks, and there were women who were standing there. Reb Elchanan told the people that we are a kohen for Klal Yisrael, and pigel, machshavas pigel, ben machshava pasel korban. Our avodah now is to not to think anything bad, to matzik sadin, He said, Be'esh itzato, ve'esh ato, said livnoisa, the fire that's consuming us will rebuild Kal Yisrael. And on Yud Beis Tammuz, Gimel Tammuz, they were slaughtered out. It was a mountain a few meters high, bones, it was there years later. After the war, there was Lieutenant Birnbaum, Meyer Birnbaum was a Jewish lieutenant, was in Buchenwald by the liberation, and he met an old emaciated Jew. He looked at him, so he said, from person to person, asked him, did you ever hear of Rebbe Elchanan Wasserman? So the mayor says, yeah, I remember when he was in America. So he said, I was with him there. And they asked him, I don't know if it was right there or was before. I think it was before. I think when the pogrom was going on. And they asked Rebbe Elchanan, explain to us the tkufa. What's going on? What's happening? Where's it taking us to? And Rebbe Elchanan said, there was once a person, a city person, who went on vacation to a farm for an extended period of time. And the farmer asked him, did you ever see a farm? He said, no. He said, come. He said, look outside. And he saw a field full of green stuff growing. The farmer said, watch now. He takes his plow, and he plows the entire field until there's nothing left but dirt and earth. And the person tells him, you're meshuggah. You had such a beautiful garden, and you turned it into earth. So he said, watch. Takes out a bag of beautiful seeds, golden grain. And he throws it out and covers it up with the dirt. And the city person just bewildered. A while later, a few weeks later, the field is grown with tall grain. And he says, now I see what you had. He says, no. He takes it and cuts it down and tramples it. And totally finally he has golden seeds again. He says, I see. He says, no. And he grinds it to dust and mixes it with water and burns it. And then when he takes out a baked bread and presents it, he says, now you understand. Elchanan said, we'll never see more than a churban and a binyan and a churban and a binyan. And nobody but the farmer knows where the bread comes and how it came and why green fields had to turn to earth and seeds had to be crushed and dough had to be burnt. But only Bayomahu will we understand that question doesn't have an answer. It just has an explanation why you don't understand and what you don't understand. Rabbi Chanan b'moisa b'chayev was the demus that the Olam HaYeshivas mold itself. Today, the smart people say he invented Das Torah. He's attributed with the terrible invention of Das Torah. No, he was Das Torah. He was a person whose Das contained nothing of self, nothing of Narishkeit, Kol Kuloi. It was, what am I supposed to do? In that year that he went back, in 1940, when the gates had closed on him and he was dying, he married off two sons. His two sons got married then. And at the chasen, somebody describes the chasen of one of them looked like a shiva. I mean, everybody knew. It's watching the car crash into you. And Rebbe Elchanan picked up and danced b'chol koychay. He said he has a chiyuv to get married, and that's what I'm doing. Why it is that the baker now has to grind it down, I don't know. But I have a chiyuv to have to do. The attitude of the pashtus, the hasmada, the understanding that the only thing that can dictate a person's maisim are what's right And as long as a person is living in a few worlds, what's right is coming in from a few places. Rabbi Hanan lived in, Rabbi Hanan taught himself German and Russian. He'd read, and he told people, and I never wasted time doing it. Somebody once came in, and he was eating breakfast, and he was reading a paper. And Rabbi Hanan, and looked at Rabbi Hanan, Rabbi Hanan said, if you have, you need to have time to read a paper, you need to have time to write in a paper. He wrote articles, he wrote polemics that he felt needed to be published, and you need to have time to finish Shas. If a person counts every minute and asks himself, should I be reading, should I not be reading it? Should I be writing, should I not be writing? Should I be learning, should I not be learning? If a person is capable of having that honest cheshbon nefesh, then he does what's right. And that was the only thing, the cheshbonis are not our cheshbonis. The fidelity to being a soldier. And like he said, he told somebody, another person, when he asked him, why are you going back? He said, soldiers go to the front lines. That's what they're there for. That understanding, and when we learn, the only question is what, not why, was what Reb Chaim taught him in Havana. And a certain pashtus of emuna, despite the fact that Reb Chaim had the kelim to give it over in a different language and the Chavetz Chaim, but he drew from that pashtus of emuna yedias habayre. If we're to finish off with a picture, what's the picture of Reb Chaim that stays? The person marching to Kiddush Hashem with the same Kiddush Hashem as another one of Tariq Mitzvahs, that there's a sugi of Kiddush Hashem, saying a shekloli Kiddush Hashem. The person not flinching, the person who needed a coat for and a watch, because even if you have a few hours left to live, every minute is still precious. And they can steal your body, but they can't steal your time. Which is the picture? I want to leave with a different picture. This was written by, there was a Yid, David Zaretsky, you know, I just saw he was a Talmud of Radin many years. I remember him still. He was a very tired Yid. He was the secretary of the Bat Dinim in Yerushalayim. He has a son-in-law who, by the time to Ruchim, is a marketeer somewhere. Very chosh of Yid, Zaretsky. And he wrote a memory. He says it was in the year 1932. It was the year last year the Chofetz Chaim was alive. Rabbi Chanan would go every single Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Yom Neroim. He would stay in Sukkot, he would stay in Radin. He felt he needed to reconnect to the Chavetz Chaim, and he would go for Elul. And when the Chavetz Chaim was Nifta, we spoke about it once, he went to Kelm, to Rabbi Daniel. And he would go. It was his last year, the Chavetz Chaim was Nifta, 33 in the summer. This was the 32 Sukkot time. And the Chavetz Chaim was very old, very frail, very weak. And he expressed an interest that for Hakofis, he would like to have a minyan in his house. He doesn't want to go to yeshiva, it's too difficult. So the Bochum told him, what are you talking? We'll carry you there, the chair. So Chofetz Chaim said, what do you mean carry me in a chair? What kind of, I'm not the type of people who carry in a chair. So Rabbi Chanan walked over and he said, it's very sad for children if the father doesn't participate with them. So Chofetz Chaim was nochadaita, and he said, okay. They came to the Yakofis, they brought Chofetz Chaim on a chair. Chofetz Chaim was very old, very thin, he was bone and skin, thin, wrapped in a coat. And he was sitting in the middle, everybody was dancing around, but he wasn't very responsive. He wasn't looking at anything particular. He was looking at himself, he was very into himself, and that was it. Rabbi Chanan was dancing with the Bachim together. Rabbi Chanan had terrible circulation problems in his feet. He could barely, he schlepped his feet. And when he was dancing, two Bachim had to hold him and, you know, just make sure that he doesn't trip and so on. He suffered all his life from a lot of pain, and that was him. And he was dancing with the Bachim together. And all of a sudden, he broke away from the Bachim and he walked over in front of Chofetz Chaim. And everybody stood back. And he stood in front of Chofetz Chaim. And Chofetz Chaim picked up his head, looked at him, and his eyes lit up, and he began clapping. And Rav Chaim began dancing. And Chafetz Chaim began clapping more. And the same Rav Chanan, whose feet didn't move, and who couldn't move himself, and began to dance Leimal with Hadein, the person said, up and down like a feather. And the Bachrim began singing and dancing. And he said, it was a machzeh of Chavetz Chaim's eyes looking out and animatedly clapping, and Rav Chanan floating like a feather. To me, it's a dogma of a Moira Godel and a Moira Cotton. The bright light of the Chavetz Chaim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, Shaloiki fi erech ha'adayrus, Chavetz Chaim would say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes needs at the end of a door to bring something of that was of many doors ago. And Rabbi Chanan was the Moira Cotton, was the one who knew how to translate the Chavetz Chaim's tzidkis into a model for Bachrim to learn, to daven, and hug their heretz, everything about it, to translate it, to see. Actually, I and Rosa, a tumus of a kohen gadol. And Asher Ayin Rosa, the Bachonim, and Fazis, and Mecharkeb Chalois. And I saw a person who saw it. And it's so far away from us. It's light years away. The Dmus of the Chavetz Chaim, the Dmus of Bachonim, and the Dmus of Bachonim dancing to Chavetz Chaim. But that's the Dmus. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us at the end of such a difficult period of time. A Ha'arish Lemal Modain that put down Hanhagas Chaim and a Shulchan Aruch for us. And a person who was able to translate those Hanhagas into a viable model that would make a yeshiva bacha, a ben Torah that would be understanding to be. And the person that would make Balabatim that were receptive to it. That's what happened. If he would have been looking with human das, he would have said, what am I going to America to collect money for building I'll never build? For marry off a child for children that will never be? Raise a generation of yeshiva bachim for a world that's destroyed? That's for people who think segment by segment, slide by slide. But there's a long process, and there's a farmer in charge of it. And if a person does what's right, that person does what he should do. Then at the end, the bread that was baked was the Chavetz Chaim's and Rabbi Chanan's and the Mesiras Nefesh and everything else that went into it. That'll be the bread.